You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Sweet Gal B coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text, the number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. He joins us every other Tuesday at this time, the host of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, the aforementioned Pat Kreitlow, broadcasting live from his home at Lake Wissota. Good morning, Pat.
Getting the Yacht Rock fix that I need every Tuesday morning. God bless you people.
You know where to come. You know where
I
to come.
Do.
We got you fix. We got your taste.
from a very smoky, rainy, I've actually got Ronnie Millsap in my head, Smoky Mountain Rain, because we got this smoky rain. I've never seen this before.
Seriously.
You think the rain would wash it out? No, it's coming in with the system. It's insane.
Well, so keep that in mind as well. We are under some advisories as far as air quality is concerned because of the smoke from the Canadian wildfires. So be aware of that. We are delighted to be joined right now along with Pat Kreitlow, the founder of Motherhood for Good. Kate Duffy is here. Good morning, Kate. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Yes. We wanted to talk to you because you did a little Katie Porter kind of whiteboard breakdown yesterday after Luann Bird, who is a friend of the show. Yes. We've had on the show many, many times. Luann Bird had a little exchange with no one other than the Speaker of the Assembly, Robin Voss, who we like to affectionately call the Popcorn King. We do have a clip from that exchange.
We're going to play the clip of the exchange. And then, Kate, you can take over once it's done about what you talked about in your video.
Okay.
Great. Play that clip, Calvin, please.
I do quite a few of these.
I guess I look at it and say we just don't have, we already have enough welfare in Wisconsin. I really don't know why we're doing
welfare
this.
Thing.
Oh, okay. It's 100%. Yeah, yeah. Okay. And we already sit there have a chance of problems with funding Medicaid as it is.
Well, that's going to get worse. We know that. So why not? Why not fund poor people?
What do you mean?
Why not take care of poor people? Women.
Well, they already have access to Obamacare for free.
Yeah. Feel free to come in.
Well,
and sign
that
in
might
here,
change.
Over here.
Well, it doesn't right now.
But still, postpartum care, I guess, doesn't get covered.
Feel free to come right over here and sign.
Correct, but it would on Obamacare, which is why we want people that want Obamacare.
So you
feel free to come right in, sign
fund
in.
Fund it because it's a poverty thing.
No. That's not what I said.
What was the word you said?
So there's two ways for people to get insurance: private sector, public sector.
Yeah.
Public sector should be last resort at first draw.
That's enough. It's kind of hard to hear, but Robin Voss essentially tells Luann Bird when she asks about coverage for poorer people that Obamacare is free, that the ACA is free.
I didn't know that, Jane.
So everybody should be good. Pat, what do you
want to say? Drag him, Kate. Do it.
Yeah. So this was interesting. So Luann went to one of his listening sessions a couple weeks ago, and I have heard his listening sessions. He doesn't really take just any question. It's like a very kind of stricter format.
I bet.
It looks like in the video, I think she got there early and just kind of like went and talked to him really quick, which is like, so Luann. Mm-hmm. And she got this and she actually sent it to me. And so part of it surprised me and part didn't, right? The welfare part, we've heard him say that a lot about this postpartum Medicaid and blocking it. And as a reminder to everybody listening, this is like so supported by everybody on both sides. It already passed the Senate 32-1. It has the support of 74 out of 99 assembly members, including many from his own caucus.
Just to clarify, Kate, what you're talking about is extending this postpartum coverage for a year.
Yeah. Yes. And it's not even expanding it to more people. It's just allowing the people who are eligible for it, the women who have access to Medicaid because they're pregnant and postpartum, just extending that time to 12 months as opposed to kicking them off at 60 days. And we are one of only two states who has not done that.
Right. So, and Robin Voss's whole contention is that that's expanding welfare if we do that.
Yes. Which, and he said that before. He already thinks we have enough welfare, yada, yada, yada. I would love if, like, somebody could just ask him when they have him, well, what is welfare? Because, you know, it's not like a, it's more of an ideology, not necessarily a policy. And why is he calling this welfare, but not, you know, support for school vouchers?
Or the loan that he got for his business during the pandemic.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not so welfare.
It's definitely a strategic word he uses when he's talking about certain things. But besides that, it was interesting that he said three times in that clip, well, we don't need it. Those women can just get on Obamacare for free. Again, another word he's deliberately using, Obamacare,
right,
instead of the ACA. Because that's not true. And he said it like three times.
Yeah. That and that was the thing, was like, I when I heard that, and trying to keep the professionalism in my voice here, but when you watch this, when you watch the video, the sneering and the condescension of his words, the way he speaks to Luann, who is just trying to get an answer, and he just speaks from a place of, like, that was the question I had, is he's either lying or he's ill-informed. And I don't think he's ill-informed. I think he knows that Obamacare isn't free. But he says things like that and just lets it, he allows it to just be out there in the world. And he walks away. He's like, yeah, I told her.
Yep. Yeah. And I wasn't like fully surprised to hear him say that because I have like a large community who calls about this all the time and they call their own reps. I have heard from some people from their reps, like Shea Sortwell and a couple other ones, that their reps have been telling them, well, we don't need it because these women can just get on Obamacare for free. And that's why I said in the video that I did, like, I just showed the math. It's like, no, you can't. Maybe. So there's like, you know, you're eligible for the Medicaid based on where you are in regards to the poverty level.
Right.
Obviously, it goes up when you are pregnant and postpartum. But the ACA is like, that has different stipulations too. So there may be a case where somebody can get like almost free or very low cost. But again, that's very rare. And even if they can get that, it's like then going through all the paperwork and trying to apply and going through all that when you have a 6-week old, like, give me a break.
Yeah. That's something we've talked about too, is the fact that this isn't just you walk in the room, press a button, and you get all this money
Right. Or you fill out one app, one sheet. It's not, we're not talking about a one sheet application.
I made the example last week. This is how strict BadgerCare is. I once tried to apply for it many years ago, and I made $19 over the accepted. And that was it. There was no negotiation. There was no do this. It's like, it was literally, you make this much, sorry, you're not eligible. And that was the end of the conversation. So there are guardrails in place, and this isn't about pregnant or parents who have had children who are gaming the system. This is something that everyone agrees upon.
Most.
Here's what you have to remember about the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, is that it is not public insurance. There is no public option.
Right.
Joe Lieberman killed the public option idea for the Affordable Care Act. So if you're getting support, you're getting premium credits to purchase private insurance from private companies.
Yep.
The Affordable Care Act just makes some of that care from private companies more affordable. What Robin Voss is doing is, once again, playing the role of Joe Lieberman and saying, we don't want you to have the public option of Medicaid. We will steer you toward these private companies as we continue to try to knock down the Affordable Care Act, so that, once again, these private companies can deny coverage on a whim. So for him, it's less about the new moms now than it is his long game of eventually undermining the Affordable Care Act and Medicaid and making sure that the private sector for-profit insurance companies always come out on top.
If you're just joining us, we have Kate Duffy from Motherhood for Good, as well as Pat Kreitlow, who is the host of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow right here on Civic Media Radio Network from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. The one thing I wanted to make clear also in that video, because yes, there's a lot of things happening, there's a lot of noise. I'm going to post the video, Kate, that you put up explaining everything, but I also want to just let everyone know at the end of that video, he states clearly on what Pat was just saying, I would rather have people go to private insurance because there's no money for his campaign and for him through a public option. He wants to make sure those guys are taken care of.
Yep.
And that, again, that's the other thing too, is like, are you lying or are you ill-informed? I think you're lying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Translation to that is he would like people on for-profit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah, because business is the best, the marketplace is the best, and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, it's so infuriating because she says, why don't you want to take care of poor people? And Robin Voss just can't even muster up the energy to
Well, it's more, but it's more like, well, there's already help for them.
Yeah.
They don't need any more help. It's already there. It's already there. It already exists if they would just take advantage of it. Yeah. But yes, Kate.
Well, that to the like 40 women a year dying in that postpartum period, Robin Voss.
But they're pro-family and they want more women to have a lot more babies. We should all be having more babies and being more pro-family and all that stuff. It's just once you have it, we don't like to help. Then, well, come on, kid, you're on your own.
They barely like to help you while you're having the baby, and they'll do everything they can to get the baby, and then you're fine. Go away. Bye-bye.
Right. It's the benevolent billionaire mindset of, you know, your health care will be taken care of by the private sector or by donations. The same with your education. That's why we fight public education. It's why they fight public transportation. It's why they fight almost anything with public in front of it, is because to them, it's taking food off the table of these billionaires who will otherwise take care of us. Mm-hmm. I'd rather we take care of each other with our tax dollars and have good, responsible public servants who identify a problem like too many new moms dying and do something about it.
Well, and as you said,
very
Kate,
interesting hill to die on.
Well, and what's really frustrating about that expanding that coverage for new moms is that that's a bipartisan thing that passed, as you pointed out when we first started talking, with a lot of support on both sides.
Yeah, support on both sides, but also it's like in every single like lobbying group that supports it is like a cast of characters you would never imagine on the same bill together.
Yeah,
you know, it's the Catholic Association, Pro-Life Wisconsin, of course, like physicians and ACLU and it's supported by everybody. So that's why I'm saying it doesn't make sense. It's a very interesting hill to die on. I don't know if he's just being stubborn and holding out or what.
But I saw something also this morning that said 30% of employers do not offer health insurance. So it's not like every company offers health insurance. Mm-mm. Not every company is in a position to do that. They don't.
I think that this goes back to what we've talked about in the past, which is when they had all the power in the world, they could do whatever they want. Once FAIR MAPS came into play and a few more Democrats got into power, they are going to do everything they can to deny Democrats any sort of say, and more importantly, deny Tony Evers any sort of win possible. And he will allow, as you put it, Kate, women to die every year to keep this from happening. And I think it's just when you hear Republicans in the assembly openly say, I don't know why this isn't happening. And also from a political standpoint, Pat, you can attest to this. Take it home to your district, knock doors, and say, look what we did for you. This is Robin Voss being the worst version of a monster possible and caring not at all about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like he knows he's going down and he's taking everybody with him.
Yep, I completely agree.
Do we really, because PJ on the live stream says Robin's up for re-election in 2027. Do we really think that Robin's finally done being King of the Hill?
No, and it would be 2026, and the term would start in 2027. But he's going to stick to his ideological guns because he is an ideological extremist, and that's what they do. And they don't care if he goes down with the ship. He sees a long line of people who've been well cared for if they get defeated or leave office or things like that. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, looking at you, for example.
Yeah. Pat Kreitlow is here. Kate Duffy, the founder of Motherhood for Good. We have so much more on the way. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We will be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Mock, and Calvi Tini on the board coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up an hour from now, we will wrap up the show, as we always do, with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it is the Boulder Dash edition. I highly encourage you to stick around for that. Right now, though, we are joined by Pat Kreitlow, host of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Mornings 6 to 9 across the Civic Media Radio Network, and the founder of Motherhood for Good, Kate Duffy, is here as well.
And we were talking about earlier about this battle over statewide Medicaid access for pregnant people, and just in general, we don't expand. We haven't expanded the ACA coverage here in the state ever. Pregnant people have 60 days after giving birth. But there's also a wider discussion we were talking about earlier, and one of the things, and I think what Robin Voss tries to do, and we see Congress and the Senate doing, is weaponizing this fight for Medicaid in the way of saying we're saving Medicaid, we're preserving Medicaid. And they like to talk about able-bodied people, which always gets me really upset, because as you just said, Jane, when 30% of businesses do not offer health insurance, it has nothing to do with able-bodied versus disabled. This has to do with the coverage you can access through your business. And big businesses like Walmart, I've been tracked and clocked as telling their employees, go on state aid. We don't want to give you health insurance. Go on state aid. It's better. While they get millions, tens of millions, if not billions, in tax breaks, all those things, some would call that corporate welfare. But
some
like,
would. Some yeah, would, yeah.
It's just it's what we're seeing now is that, you know, making a poisonous narrative to push cuts to Medicaid that are going to affect everyone, including the people who voted for them.
And by the way, cuts that aren't necessarily explicit cuts, but by increasing those work requirements, those reporting requirements, as Kate can tell you, her hands are a little full right now as it is with the little one at home. Now imagine having to get online or fill out a form, and now you have to do it more often to prove that you've been working for 80 hours a month or whatever the case may be, and you finally just, you give up. Because you can't jump through all those hoops. And they say, you see, we didn't cut Medicaid.
Right.
Busy Kate decided she just couldn't fulfill the requirements anymore. She still needs it as much as ever.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what is happening and will happen if these women get cut off at 2 months, right? And this is actually why a lot of Republicans are for it, right? Because they know that, like, if these women drop off at 60 days, we know most of the postpartum deaths happen between 6 and 9 months. And beyond those, there's a lot of near-death experiences. There's a lot of situations where women end up in the emergency room. If they don't have insurance, that's not good for any of us as the state anyways, and having to pay for people who
emergency
don't have insurance.
Care. Sure.
So that's why they also support it. I think the fiscal estimate for this is like $20 million. And when we're looking at the overall biennial budget we have and the surplus we have, which is in the billions, it's literally like the tiniest fraction of that.
And just personally, the other thing that really annoys me to no end about this, I feel that there is this assumption by some that every woman's pregnancy experience is the same. And every pregnancy starts out great and it goes great and there's no problems and she gives birth and bingo, she's back. That's not reality.
No, it is not. And I say that as the husband of an OBGYN. And we have, of course, another OBGYN, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, on all the time. And Kate, you talk to, you know, countless moms. And the fact that there are still politicians who promote this Norman Rockwell version of pregnancy that is free of complications.
Yep.
And it doesn't just affect the coverage. We talked yesterday about how Iowa is the latest state to require people to watch a human growth development video that is riddled with inaccuracies so that they can have this cartoon depiction of how wonderful every pregnancy is. That just ain't so.
No, it's not. And even like my representative is a Republican, and one of the staffers I talk to all the time when I call tells me how his wife really dealt with postpartum depression very bad for a year. And so it's just like there are stories all over the place. And by the way, when we lose these moms, these kids are losing their moms.
Yes.
Like
yes.
We're not just letting them fall through the cracks. It's causing trauma to a child and an entire family. And we know the stats on what happens when a child that young grows up with trauma. They end up you know, not only is it bad for them personally, but they have a higher rate of landing in poverty, incarceration, things like that. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like we have to bring in Joni Ernst to say, well, we're all going to die anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the mindset we're getting from Republicans like Joni Ernst.
And Kate, the way you ended that is how whenever we talk about Robin Voss and this topic, I always end up with a huge crescendo, always petering out with, because I just want to say to him, why don't you care about people? What is it about you that makes you not care about the well-being of the individuals who live in the state that you claim to represent? Everything you do in your job seems like you dislike us and want nothing for us, because this right here, supported by so many, as you said, Kate, a wild cast of characters, he's just like, no, I don't think so.
Well, I was at the Senate hearing when this went through their health committee, and Representative Pat Snyder was in there, who's a Republican. And he said, if we can't get behind this, then what the hell are we doing here?
Wow.
Like, and it's like,
yeah. I just agreed with him.
I know.
There is bipartisanship.
I know. I'm agreeing with Rand Paul lately. What's going on in this world? Kate Duffy is the founder of Motherhood for Good. We will include that clip in our show notes so you can take a look at the just warm way Robin Voss interacts with the lovely Luann Bird. Pat Kreitlow, the host of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, 6 to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday across the network. Thank you so very much for joining us, both of you. News is coming up next, and when we return, we're to talk about board games are good for you. That's all on the way. Don't go away. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Cal B on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We're talking Econ 101. Joining us, because we are not economics experts, that's why we talk to the experts. Rick Reed is here, an economics instructor with the Fox Valley Technical College. Good morning, Rick. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We wanted to talk about the downgrade, the U.S. downgraded by Moody's. All three major credit rating firms are no longer giving the United States their best rating. For those of us who have never taken economics and are just kind of peripherally aware of economics, what does this mean and why should we care?
We should all care. So probably the easiest thing to relate to is when you go to apply for a credit card or a loan, say to buy a car, the lender is going to run your credit report, and they run it through one of three credit rating agencies, and they collect data on you and they determine how likely it is you are to pay your bills on time. And based on that score, helps determine what your credit what your interest rate is likely to be and how likely lenders are to be able to lend money to you. In a very simplistic way, this is kind of a very parallel situation. Nations, when they go to lend money or go to borrow money, get rated. And the three dominant ones that we care about in the United States are Standard & Poor's, Fitch, and Moody's. Standard & Poor's downgraded us in, about 2011. Fitch was just a couple of years ago, about 2023, and Moody's was the last one to come to the show. And basically what it means is that the United States credit. In other words, when the United States sells bonds to be able to borrow money from anybody that's willing to lend it to us, we're slightly less perfect in terms of our ability to manage our debt and pay our bills.
Well, and that's what it comes down to, essentially, if I am hearing you correctly, Professor, that they are looking at the United States and how likely we are to be good for our debts, right?
Right. And actually, Moody's, in its commentary, offered a few comments. One of them is that the big knock on the rating resulted from our inability to manage our debt overall and come to agreement. And this has been something that's plagued both Republican and Democratic administrations and Congresses. So this isn't something that suddenly happened.
Right.
However, it did just suddenly happen.
Because of this latest downgrade by Moody's.
Right.
Right.
Rick, I have a question for you, because I remember when that push notification that came through my phone saying that Standards and Poor's had downgraded America's credit rating, and it sent shockwaves through the news. I mean, it was like, oh, okay, our economy is very bad, and we were like downgraded, I think, one level, and it wasn't the end of the world, but it was still a huge thing and it's hard to come back from. Did Standard and Poor's ever upgrade us? Did we get back to the perfect across the three, or have we been sitting at that credit rating with them since 2010, 2011?
I believe we're sitting with the same credit rating since 2010, 2011.
Yeah. So the question I would have, because I'm an individual who has for the past, oh, good Lord, time's a construct, say 15 years, I've been working on getting my credit better and better and better, because for me as a person, it helps.
Yes.
How does that work for a country, though? What's the process? What's the process for, like, if America said, hey, we want to really get back on track and spend right and get that credit rate? Because if it hasn't changed since then, does it really matter then? Because as an individual basis, I feel like credit ratings are kind of a scam. I think it's a game. But how does the country on the whole
improve our credit score?
Yeah.
Right. Well, the big knock has been on our ability to manage our debt and our budgets. Moody's made commentary that it felt fairly confident that we were able to manage the value of the currency, which is really important, right? And that falls on the shoulders primarily of the Federal Reserve. They've done a great job of making sure that the value of the dollar has been relatively stable. But the thing that really has hurt us is the fact that we continue to run deficits and we don't seem to be able to get that under control. And as importantly, we don't seem to be able to set a clear path over time. So if you think about the current issues that are hitting us, the tariffs, all the issues around the tariffs have created a lot of uncertainty in the marketplace. And the issues around the administration is calling the Big Beautiful Bill that has now been approved by the House of Representatives. You know, that wasn't the thing that comes to my mind is that, remember the film from this is a long time ago, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
Sure.
And John Candy and Steve Martin are driving down the highway. They're trying to make time, and a driver is riding parallel to him and honking their horn and saying, "You're going the wrong way." And Candy and Steve Martin go, "Ha ha ha! How do they know where we're headed?" right? Sure, buddy. Ha ha ha! You know, this is kind of the same thing in my. Yeah, that was the first thing that came to my mind, was that Moody's is basically saying, "Folks, you got to get your act together." Congress and the administration are saying, okay, yeah, this is what we're going to do for our budget. We're going to have these tax cuts that we're going to reinforce. We're going to cut some spending in specific areas like Medicaid and SNAP. But at the end of the day, the Congressional Budget Office has basically said that bill is going to create another $3.8 trillion in debt over the next 10 years. that's the kind of thing that Moody's is pointing to and saying, you know what, you've got enough debt. You've checked that box. It's time to reel it in a little bit.
Yeah.
And you need to start making some progress in that direction.
Oh my gosh. That is, I don't want to say but that's a really, for me, my brain, that's a really good comparison. And now as a way of thinking and talking about it, that's a really scary way of putting it, that they're basically saying, hey, here's how you do it. And we're like, cool, we're going to do it a different way. See you in a couple of years.
Well, and I guess, again, I go back to the IRS under President Biden, because they had hired so many more IRS agents who were going after the bigger tax cheats, which brought in over $1 billion when they were doing that. And now they've X'd that out. So we don't have that revenue coming in either. So it's kind of a rolling ball that doesn't seem to be stopping anywhere, does it?
Exactly. No, it doesn't. And it seems like it may be headed in the wrong, direction.
Right. Right.
One of the great challenges, though, is that we talked a little while ago about the U.S. bonds.
Yes.
And the fact that the yield just went up on the U.S. bonds because they became less attractive. And that preceded Moody's downgrade. And there have been a number of factors, not the least of which is the fact that part of it had to do with China selling off a lot of their holdings of the U.S. Treasury bonds after they were threatened with a very steep tariff level.
Right.
And, you know, you can interpret it however you want. The easy interpretation is that China was saying, okay, if you're going to charge us with tariffs, take this. And they sold off a bunch of U.S. Treasury bonds. And what that really did was it effectively depressed the price of the bond, which raised the yield rate. Bottom line is it makes it more expensive for the U.S. government to borrow money moving forward, right?
On that topic, Rick, so, you know, in China sold bonds. Who do they sell them to? Do they sell them back to the United States? Do they sell them to other countries? Do they sell them? Can they sell them to individuals? Or because if they're selling them off, I'm just wondering who gets them in the long run then.
Yeah. An easy way to think about bonds is kind of like cars.
Yeah.
You've got the brand new car coming off the assembly line, and then you've got the used car market, right? And so when the U.S. issues a bond, it's minting a brand new car, a brand new bond, and they sell it to the market, and it matures in, you know, 1, 2, 10, 30 years.
Right.
In that period of time, that bond can be sold on the open market to anybody that is willing to buy it. So it's kind of like the used car market in that analogy. But much like the used car market, it doesn't exist in isolation. So if the used car market is starting to show signs of price instability, that impacts the new bond market as well. So when already issued bonds are generating a lower price, translating to a higher yield to the buyer, that means that the U.S. government, when it issues new bonds, has to compete against that, and they have to kind of respond in kind.
If you're just joining us, economics instructor Rick Reed is our guest. He's with Fox Valley Technical College, just talking about Econ 101, trying to break things down for those of us who are not economists. And we had talked about bonds the last time that you were on, because from what I understand, Rick, bonds were like the most solid of bets. Bonds were always a pretty solid bet, right? You are buying from the U.S. government. You are helping to fund the U.S. government by buying bonds. Is that accurate?
Correct. You're supplying the lendable funds to the government.
I'm loaning them money.
Right.
I'm loaning them money. But then when the interest went up, that was bad for the government, but good for me as the holder of the bond?
Exactly. Because the reality of part of what you're buying with a U.S. government bond is a very secure instrument. So far, knock on wood, the government's never failed to pay its debt
to
any of the bondholders, right? So from that perspective, you're basically getting a kind of a sure thing. when bond prices go down and the yield rate goes up, it's good for you as an investor. It's horrible for the government because now they're paying out more, paying a higher interest on anything they need to borrow money for.
I guess the question, and I've asked this question to a lot of situations where we are investing in the government, whether it's our Social Security, our unemployment insurance. What happens if the government can't pay? Is it just it's too bad, so sad? Or is it, I mean, do I have action to get my money because I bought in good faith from you and now you're saying you can't pay me? Is it a you risk it with the bond, even though it's so surefire? Or is it something where I can come back? And honestly, we have to go to break. So if you want to answer this on the other side of the break, because it's going to take a little bit longer, but.
Rick Reed is here, an economics instructor from Fox Valley Technical College. We are going to continue with Econ 101 on the other side. Stay close. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, and Dr. Slide on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us at 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. And just a reminder, make sure you have the Civic Media app. Mm-hmm. Our statewide Scani Summer Text to Win contest gets underway today. You have a bunch of chances to win. Listen in the 7, 11, 2, and 4 o'clock hours for that hour's keyword. Yep. You want to text in that word via the Civic Media app and be in the running for some fantastic prizes that could but probably won't change the course of your entire life. Download the Civic Media app and be ready. In the 11 o'clock hour, Tom Hartman will have the word for you to text in. Good luck.
We were talking to Rick Reed, who is an economic instructor at Fox Valley Technical College. And before we went to the break, I posed a question that I will sum up very quickly. If I, the investor, invest in U.S. bonds and the government can't pay yields on those, what is our recourse as individuals or anybody?
Yeah, basically sell the bond is what you would do, because the likelihood of them saying we're not going to pay, period. I don't think it'll be like a light switch where one day we can pay, the government can pay, and the next day it can't, with no news about that in advance. More likely what would happen is that if the government was unable to pay, and really what we're talking about is not that it can't pay, but that it can't pay on time.
Right.
The reality of it is that would push the value of the bonds down pretty considerably, push the yields up pretty considerably. And I think what you'd see is a bunch of investors that are holding bonds trying to sell them very quickly. The likelihood of us going from where we are today to that scenario, it would take years, maybe decades. I don't think you're going to see it happen overnight. What's more likely, though, is that we continue down the path of having an eroding credit rating as a nation. And if that continues to happen, and if the government, well, one of the things that happened, I think it was back in 2012, 2013, where the government basically was shut down. There was a group of congressmen that basically said, if we can't balance the budget, we're just not going to pass the bill.
Right.
We're not going to pass a bill that doesn't balance the budget. Noble cause, a really bad way to do it. And the reason it's a bad way to do it is that it basically raised the question of the stability of the government and the ability to pay its bills on time. And that's going to have an impact on attractiveness of bonds to buyers.
Cassandra on the live stream is essentially asking the same thing. If this House bill does not pass in the Senate, what happens then? Do we default on our debt, or is it just more likely that they're going to have to do another continuing resolution?
Right, they're going to have to continue. We're going to patch this thing up as long as we can. Now, historically, what we've had if you look over the last 10 years, we've had really low interest rates, right? Really low interest rates. And so that's enabled the government to be able to borrow money and not worry quite as much about balancing the budget urgently, right? Because the interest rate, you know, if you're paying, 2%, it's a lot better than if you're paying 3%, 4%, 5%.
Sure.
That time is going to start to run out, and we're going to start to see the interest payments start to rise pretty quickly if we're not careful.
Well, and weren't our interest rates held not unnecessarily, but they were held low for a long time purposefully.
Right. Yeah, right. The Federal Reserve, in response to the Great Recession of 2008-2009, one of the things that it did was loaded its balance sheet. Basically, they made as much money, lendable money, available as possible.
Right.
Because one of the things that you don't want to have happen at the end of a recession, during a recession, or at the end of the recession, is having qualified borrowers not being able to access funds quickly and relatively inexpensively. You want them to be able to borrow the money to be able to invest to stimulate the economy.
Right.
The Federal Reserve kind of went overboard on that a little bit.
Well, because they kept them
for quite a while.
They kept them really low for a long time.
You bet.
Yeah.
This is why we have experts on, folks, because Jay and I, we are not experts. We're not lawyers, doctors, or economists. We are all those things adjacent.
Yes. That's why Rick Reed is here, an economic instructor from Fox Valley Technical College. We've got time for maybe one more question, Rick.
Yeah, Lori from Hayward asked the question, do you think that we should raise, do you think the Social Security cost of living adjustment should be raised this year?
Well, historically, it's raised based on the cost of living. They raise it based on the CPI from the prior year, and it's voted on by Congress to be able to enable it. So if you're receiving Social Security, you want it raised as much as possible. If you're not receiving Social Security, you're kind of, you don't really care much until you start, getting close to it. So should it or shouldn't it be? The standard practice has been that it's raised in accordance with the CPI.
There was an increase last year, I believe. Okay. I believe there was an increase in the cost of living last year. He is an economics instructor with the Fox Valley Technical College. We do Econ 101 with Rick Reed to try and break things down. Thank you so much. We really, really appreciate your time.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
Stay with us. News is coming up next. And then when we return, we go beyond the cheese with the McLaughlin and Hayes Hat Company. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.